What's up, y'all? This is Hilliard Guest with the Screenwriters Rant Room. Just want to let you guys know, you guys are about to listen to part two with Carlito Machete, writer, producer. He's currently one of the writers on Empire. You guys, I'm sure those of you who are fans of the show, who have just watched the previous episode, episode two, that was his episode that he wrote. It was badass. So we are having so much fun. We just kept going. So we decided to give you guys a part two. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Screenwriters Rant Room with Carlito Machete. Peace.
I'ma say what I feel, and I promise to keep it real.
Welcome to the Rant Room. Well, you gotta be a rider till your fears are diminished and the doubts are behind ya. It's hard to grind and the business got me stressed in the rent room. We let that shit up off our chest. You know the street nerd has got no time for no caca. Sass in class, yes, that's Mr. Bolakaja. Never have to guess when you're listening to Hilliard. He gon' bring more game than a shark playing billiards. It's all about the craft of screenwriting. It's exciting when you turn an outline into something enlightening. Your pen and words are like bullets in a gun. Write what you feel, say what you want.
Welcome to the Rant Room.
It's been, it hasn't been easy. I can't front, you know.
Right.
But whatever. Here we are.
I just wanted to say that another thing is, you know, to everybody that's listening too, is you have that creative spark in you. I think it's really important that young people, children, whatever, the arts be encouraged, and it's such a travesty that it's being destroyed the way it's being destroyed. Because if you didn't have that credit, because so many people are hopeless, but you had that. And even somebody saying to you, you know, Carlito, you write. Nobody, I do this thing called Young Storytellers with these fifth graders.
Dope.
And
nice.
They do scripts and stuff like that. And I just like, you know what, write whatever you want to write. It doesn't have to, if you want to write about a chocolate man on the moon who destroys, you know, Hitler, do that. Right. That's your thing. But just encouraging that creativity. But so many people do not have that. Mm-hmm. And so to hear you talk about that, there's something there. I don't know where it was that just, you know, you, by strength of your sheer will is like, I have this creative spark in me. But so many people have that in them and it's never been brought out of them.
Right. Or it's been tamped down.
It's been tamped down. Or being in the hood, it's like, you know what, you can't, because I remember talking.
Because it's not cool to be.
It's not cool. When I was talking, I used to say, I grew up in Compton. So I was like, oh, aren't I? They'd be like, aren't I? What the hell is wrong with you? You talking about, you know, right around when they were doing all that, the Dutu Center and Skateland USA and all that bullshit. Because my mother was like, you know, when Draylen were doing all that shit when I was a baby. And, and my mother was like, you are from Compton. You're not from Ignorant Town.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. You are from Compton. Don't listen to all that bullshit. So once again, you got to find that within yourself. But as you're, if you're young, you got to have some kind of validation as well. So that, you know, I hear that. I'm hearing you always referencing back to this, like this creative spark, this inner strength, this something that you had in you, which led you to. And even when it's not been easy, you still go forward. You still keep going.
It's like
on.
It keeps you alive.
Because like look where you are now. Like, and people think that when they look at you, oh, he's on the Empire. Oh, he was on the Source. That, you didn't wake up one day and like be on the Source and be on the Empire. That wasn't where you was at.
Yeah, especially when you're saying you're coming out of prison and then going to college. Like, who does that?
Yeah, who yet? People do that. I mean, they do that.
I mean,
there's so much that's against you.
Right.
You know, when people start glamorizing what you do, and I'm not saying that glamorizing or not, but when they're going, wow, you know, they're fascinated by it. I'm sure you've run into people like that, and you probably can read them on an elemental level. Like, you only into me because I was in, you know, you think I got some street cred.
A little bit. Every now and then you catch that, you know. The funny thing is that when you're in hip hop, having been locked up, it's like, whatever. Like,
yeah, that's your badge. You
know, but the thing for me is that I never been ashamed of it. Fuck that. It is what it is.
That's right.
But I never really used it as a calling card. Like, you know, I'm the fuck that. Like, you know what I'm saying? I know too many. You know, I know too many murderers still walking around in the sun. Like it's, you know, it's all good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. As fucking warped as it sounds, I don't mean that in a pejorative way.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, the heat comes and you gotta whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also know too many people who got body slammed by the system for bullshit crimes.
That's right.
Or not bullshit, but like stuff that damn, yo, like, you don't got to turn the lights off. For one of my boys, man, crazy talented graffiti writer, Spell from Philly, man, S-P-E-L, man. The brother is a monster artistically, just crazy. And being at the wrong place at the wrong time, that brother is doing life in prison. Damn. And everybody in the hood knows he didn't do it.
Wow.
Every fucking body knows he didn't do it. Mm. Unfortunately, the person that did it is no longer with us. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So having seen that, those two extremes, I don't know, it keeps me in check. I'm always thinking there before the grace of God, you know. There was one time where something had happened and my recourse, like my way of thinking was, all right, I'm going to go do that. And I couldn't find a dude. I couldn't find him. And
thank God.
Sometimes I think about that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Sometimes I think about it because as much as I used to fancy myself, you know, I read The Godfather when I was 13 and I was like, oh, all right, so you got to be. My mom's had died and I went to live with my father and he had his own shop, carpentry shop, right? Mm-hmm. And it was far as hell. It was in Miami, but it was in Cutler Ridge. It was like an hour fucking drive every day, 7 a.m. So I was miserable and I would be in there helping him out. Mm-hmm. And every time I'm lifting a piece of furniture, I'm like wiping my hands. And he was like, stop wiping your goddamn hands. He's like, you were working in the office or some shit, right? And one day I was sitting around running up his office phone bill in his office, calling my friends back in New York. Uh-huh. This is when long distance was a thing, by the way. And so,
yes.
So I was running up his bill. He was like, you need to stop calling New York. And I was like, I'm bored. He was like, well, draw. Because he would buy me art supplies. Mm-hmm. Draw. I'm tired of drawing. Well, read something. I read all my comic books. And he looked around his office and he had a copy of The Godfather.
Oh, really?
And he was like, here, and toss it to me. And I was like,
Mario,
but because
Poos.
It was one of those reissues that has like the pictures and stills of
the
movie.
Gotta get you.
So I was like, whoa, what's this about? And I read that book, and as much as I fancied myself this dude who, if I'm going to do dirt, I'm going to do it quiet so nobody knows, you know, I have my knucklehead moments where I'm loud and brash and popping shit and everybody knows what I'm up to.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't find that dude, man. And to this day, I'm like, damn, yo. Because I, you know, like I had no doubt in my mind what was going to happen. So, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I have friends that were that. And to your earlier point, about, you know, there's always layers, there's always levels to it, right? So I said to you guys earlier, I never considered myself no hard rock gangster dude,
sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't front like that now. Like, I'm not going to front now in my 40s like, yeah, I was this dude. I was none of that. and real talk, I still got friends in their 40s that if I go back to Philly or New York and go have a beer with them and they hear the podcast and go, word, nigga, you was a gangster, word. and all of a sudden we in something, grown-ass men. So I'm never going to front like that, right? But again, there was dudes. Like I meet people who that's just never been their experience ever, right? So they hear some of the stories and they're like, wow, Carlito. But you normalize abnormal circumstances.
That's right.
So to me, it's like, I mean,
when you're in
this one got hit and that happened to that and I seen madness. You know what I'm saying? Put it this way. Like, when I used to watch The Wire, like, it was familiar, but at the same time, it's like, fuck. Like, it would bring back so many memories, it was uncomfortable to watch.
Because
it'd be like a PTSD trigger. Like, so-and-so got blown up.
Right.
I remember when we found so-and-so in it, you know?
Yeah.
So I've come across people who that's never been their experience. Mm-hmm. It's just growing up in the same neighborhood. It's just never been their experience.
Yep.
Why? Because some of us in the neighborhood would do certain things. Some of us wouldn't.
True.
Mm-hmm. Right? But then even out of the ones that would do certain things, there were some of us amongst us who you'd be like, that motherfucker is crazy. Like, just, and you just know, don't get into it with so-and-so because he will lay you out in the middle of the street in broad daylight.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's going to go to prison forever, but obviously he doesn't give a goddamn. So I'm sorry to just keep running off. But what I'm saying, man, is that this whole thing of it being a calling card, it's relatively new. I came out of my first meeting with HBO a few years ago, 2012. Great general meeting with Francesca Orsi, who I owe a lot to. I love her. She's she's the truth. 2.5 hours in there, running my mouth, as you see, kicking it with them, right? And when I leave the meeting, my mentor, Jeff Wald, Hollywood legend, veteran, and my man Jordan Summers, his son, we're getting our cars at getting into the car at the garage, and Jeff says to me, and Jeff is, yo, I gotta shout him out because he is a fucking hardcore Bronx Jew kick ass motherfucker. So like when I met him, we started talking about the Bronx back in the day. He went to Clinton, my brother went to Clinton, and we're just kicking it, whatever. And I said to him, yo, dude, like, in another life, you'd have been a gangster. And he was like, you know, that's what he got the gruff voice.
Yeah.
That's what the counselors told my mom. Your son's either going to be a politician or a gangster. So I got into the music industry. And I'm like, yo. So we leave this meeting, and he says to me, hey, Carlito, can I ask you a question? Are you ashamed that you were in prison? And I'm like, no, I ain't ashamed of that shit. Well, why don't you ever bring it up? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't. It didn't come up. Like, it didn't come up naturally. I'm not going to be like, so when I was.
So by the way.
And he told me straight up, in this town, that shit is instant. Like, you're the real deal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
Cachet.
So even since then, I don't go into meetings like, so let me tell you about the time I was in prison. Like, it's not that.
Right.
But. Now I'm like, all right, if it gives me something to talk about and whatever, what have you, sure, whatever, let's kick it. From where we come from, y'all, and I don't mean to assume, but people of color, period.
Right.
And not even people of color, blue collar, working class.
That's right.
Class people. I got a lot of white, Irish,
poor.
Italian friends that want to knock you the fuck out.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just one of those things where, again, there but for the grace of God.
That's right.
So you got to be real careful. Right?
That's right.
To me, I'd always looked at it like, I can't fucking believe I got snitched on. Like, it wasn't like I went to prison and learned how to go great.
I was doing my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't like I went to prison and was like, I got to turn my life around. As far as I'm concerned, my life was fine.
Right.
That was just a means to an end. I took care of the end and was on my way and, you know.
I would have been mad. It's like, it'd be different if you caught me when I was in the middle of doing something.
Life had other
plans.
But
I was out.
Exactly.
And they brought me back in.
Exactly.
I mean, they just do stupid. I mean, like you said, you don't glorify the stuff, but traffic warrant. Why am I shackled going to Men's County Jail in downtown LA? Shackled with a bunch of killers to go to the county. This is ridiculous. Like you said, this is what we. I'm like, well, you know what? I'm just going to fucking sit in here, 30 people in a little bitty cell. And you're like, what the fuck is this all about? But people of color, that's what we do. But you don't go around talking about that. You're like, this is just bullshit. But
when the Ferguson thing jumped off a year ago, heavy, like before the verdict and all that, I was having a couple beers with three friends of mine, white dudes. And one of them leans way to the left. One of them is kind of like in the middle, a little bit left. Mm-hmm. And the other one is right-ish, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's interesting.
Right-ish, kind of. You know, good old boy from Georgia. Mm-hmm. Good dude, my man, you know. And I'm having a conversation with these dudes, and we're trading thoughts on how that whole thing went down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening to them. And finally, like I said to them, yo, fellas, let me ask you a question, man. And be honest. Let's just keep it real. Have you ever been pulled over, like, at gunpoint? What do you mean? And I was like, at gunpoint. Like, they act like a traffic stop.
What do you mean?
Right.
And they pull you over and, you know, get out of the car. And they were like, well, no. And I said, okay, well, have you ever been pulled over, again, traffic stop, where it's not just one officer.
It's like three cars.
It's like three cars and like four or five officers running up on you, drawn on you. Get out of the fucking car. Throw the keys out the window.
Yep.
Throw the keys. Let me see your hands. For a traffic stop. Has that ever happened to you? And they were like, nah. Mm. And I was like, well, I'm not. You fellas know me. I'm not on Facebook popping off. Trying to use hyperbole to make a point. You fellas know me. I got no reason to front.
Mm-hmm.
That shit was real. Like, every time we got pulled over.
That's right.
In New York or Philly, it was like that.
That's right.
It wasn't yes, sir. No, it was not that. It was get your fucking, you know, drop your pants, lift your shirt up. I was next to my girl. Like, drop your pants. Come on, dude. Drop your motherfucking pants.
Mm-hmm.
White cop, black cop, Latino cop, Asian cop. Like, it did not fucking matter.
That's right.
So, you know, again, you normalize abnormal stuff.
They talking about PTSD.
They will beat your ass. We found that on you. Come on, get in the car. And you know, it's a bullshit little dime bag. You're not going to really do no time for that.
Right.
And you laugh it off. All right, y'all, I'll be back. And you go and they take you in the car. And you come back 3 hours later, lump the fuck up. What they do to you, man? They beat the shit out of me, man.
Yeah.
And you laugh. You laugh.
What are you going to do?
They fucked me up, y'all. They spitting blood. They fucked me up. They took a little knot of money, $600. Took the little dime bag.
Mm.
But it's all right. I'm back. And that was the norm. That was the norm. So
I mean, that's a good thing that you don't. I mean, everything you're saying about we normalize that is like, so when he said, "Why don't you talk about being in jail?" Because why would I?
Exactly. I like, don't it took talk a while for me to even think. Yeah. That's a story. Right.
Why would that? And it's interesting. It's an interesting story.
Right.
But we live under that PTSD. Right. I don't care what they say. When a police officer, I take my car, my phone, and I'm like, I call somebody. I'm like, I just want you to know that you were on the phone with somebody.
Yeah, right.
You're not fucking going to just shoot me for no reason.
For sure.
Or I'm sitting here for 15 minutes in the dark in some, I don't know, Riverside or whatever. And it's like,
what you doing in Riverside?
Yeah, what was I doing? I'm visiting my cousin, actually. Just sitting there for 15 minutes. Just sit there. Okay, they come over. It wasn't you guys. The car is blue, and it was two white boys in a blue car. A blue car at night.
Well, at least they were honest enough to tell you that, as opposed to...
Well, yeah, usually at night. You get out of here. You Negroes, get out of here.
What I have found interesting over the years, though, is that, you know, so people need jobs, right? So a good portion of my friends, family... are peace officers now, whether they're corrections, whether they're cops, whether they're customs, FBI, you know what I mean? So now I get to hear both perspectives.
Right. Mm.
What I try to do, I mean, you know, who the fuck am I, right? But what I try to do is offer just little checkpoints. Like, don't forget, bro. Don't forget where we came from. So now you could relate a little bit more. Like my brother Lou, when he was a CEO on Rikers, he was very well liked in there because he's a Bronx dude. Like he grew...
Right.
I'm not going to put him on blast, but he did his thing too, you know,
not with the drugs,
with other things. Mm-hmm. And so by the time he went to Rikers, you know, he would know how to talk to cats and not try to dehumanize them.
Right.
And Lou is like 5'4", 5'5", and built like a pit bull. So whenever it would come down to the get down, he'd be like, word, and put his joints up and be putting the beats on cats and be like, nah, nobody get in it. It's between me and you, inmate. And and come home at night like, I taught this dude, you know, to respect that. But then, again, it would get balanced out.
Mm.
He would run into old friends of ours, and they're like, yo, I ran into so-and-so. Word, is he a CO? Nope. He's going up for, like, an armed robbery and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, some of my friends are NYPD now. And so we talk, you know.
Yeah.
Perspective. We offer perspective. When things are getting crazy, I'll shoot a text. Yo, be careful, man.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful. And it's a give and take. Like, so they know not to come with me. To me, with the blanket, blah blah blah, savages in the
ghetto. Right,
and I'm like, well, goddamn, bro. So, you know, you made the decision to do this. You know, is your solution that we should all apply to the NYPD? Like, is that what we want? I don't get it. You know what I mean? So, but again, man, I'm just a writer, man. I write for fucking TV.
And I guess on that, since you're just a writer for writing on TV, I guess because we could talk about the exciting lives of people of color all day long. But I guess our audience wants to hear about writing, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah. Let's spend a few minutes. I mean, here's what I like about where you went in with that, because everybody doesn't know a lot of the shit about you like that. So, you know what I mean? I think it's good because they hear about your journey and getting on Empire and all these other, you know, and The Leftovers. And I mean, it's a beautiful story. And I think, you know, I'd love for our audience to hear it. But I also want them to hear how fucking human you are.
Yes.
And I also want them to hear all the struggle you went through and how the shit wasn't fucking easy.
Right.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
And then some of those decisions you made where you're like, I'm quitting my job.
Yeah, they see you.
I'm going to do this.
They see you on the panel of Empire, but motherfucking don't realize what it took for you to get there.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's I appreciate where you went in and you were emotional and you told us the fucking truth.
Right.
And that's what's real, because we all were sitting here with fucking teary eyes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's real talk.
Thank
you. So now, for the motherfuckers who need to hear about your writing, let's go ahead and give him a little.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and give him a little bit of, like, moving to LA and, you know, how it all happened for you.
Okay, so here comes the drama. So
see, it's still drama. That's what I like. That's real. That's real, though. That's what's up.
So when I left The Source, I done some consulting. I worked on Def Jam Vendetta with EA Games, which is a dope little wrestling game.
Mm-hmm.
Worked on that. I was going to do a pilot, a cartoon. And so it was very up and downy. You know, I didn't want to go back and do journalism. Whatever. I'm just knucklehead with the principles. I'm extreme. And things were getting crazy. But then my boy Selwyn had jumped over to BET, working with Reggie Hudlin. That's my man to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Working with Reg and Nelson George, who's now on The Get Down for Netflix. And Selwyn brought me in because they were going to revamp their BET news department. They wanted to do like more like kind of like refresh it. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, they had come up with this show called The Chop Up. It was dope. It was the intention was to be like a black 60 minutes, like a relevant kind of like relevant to us joint. We did a lot of
60 minutes with some soul in it.
Yeah,
some soul in
it. Ask
people the questions we really want to ask.
People always tease our show and say, "You guys are like John August and Craig, but with fucking soul."
Yo, The Chop Up was dope, man. Like, we still miss it to this day. You know, I can speak my mind freely, but I feel like they gave us a crazy time slot. Like, it was like 11 a.m. on a Sunday. We were like, people at church. People ain't nobody church. Watching this.
Right, yeah.
And this is before DVRing was like a real thing, before iPads and any of that. So had it been like a 7 p.m. Tuesday night or Sunday night, you know, I think we'd have done better. But like, we did so basically it was like a 60 minutes, and every episode had like a mini doc in it, like the main piece. But we would recap the news of the week, et cetera, et cetera, smaller piece than the big piece. So we did pieces on like Blood Diamonds. We did a piece.
Wow.
I think we only did 13 episodes. We did pieces on the Blood Diamonds. We did pieces on the skyrocketing use of like crystal meth in the black gay community in DC.
Right. Wow.
I did a piece called Season of the Snitch on like this idea of stop snitching and what it has its roots in, and is it valid? If we see shit going down in our community, do you not tell the cops if you see something fucked up?
Right.
Like, how we struggle with that, right?
Right.
My man Samson, original street cat, he got his launch on The Chop Up. So I did that for a while. Then I produced a couple of specials starring Samson. So we did one on the Sean Bell tragedy, Sean Bell in New York when he was killed by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
We did one on called Ballots and Bullets, which is about gun legislation.
Mm-hmm.
We did one on voting rights for ex-cons. Mm-hmm. We did one on the N-word.
Okay.
So I did my thing there for a while. Yeah, it was dope.
It sounded like it needs to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And then we did two joints for which I was the like series producer.
Mm-hmm.
I was a producer on the first one. I was series producer for the second because we wanted to do more. And it was called Hip Hop Versus America. Mm-hmm. So the jump off of that was Don Imus, when Don Imus was running his
about the girls.
Yeah.
And all of that. Mm-hmm. So that was the jump off point for that, because we felt like, well, what gave this dude license to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we got to check ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we did this joint called Hip Hop Versus America, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to basically tackle, it was like a town hall kind of show, panel discussion, arguing and whatnot, punctuated by these little 3.5 minute little mini documentaries to illustrate the point. So we have various topics in that first one. The whole kind of gangster ideal in hip hop, in the company of white folks was another one, how we kind of like try to portray ourselves in and out
when
of
when we're in mixed companies, like, oh,
right. Yeah.
Like the whole thing. And one of them was called damn, I forgot the name of it, but it was about male-female dynamic.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to Selwyn and Reg, yo, I bet you that's the one that's going to resonate the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, that's the core of it all.
Mm-hmm.
The relationship between male and female, because, you know, when men, we come from mothers, so it's shaped by that. Mm-hmm. Women come. So, sure enough, that segment got so blown up that the part two was strictly Hip Hop Versus America, What's Love Got to Do With It? And it was examining the black love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that defined? Like, where did this kind of weird ass pimp hoe shit come into play in hip hop? It's just this idea that you gotta like treat women a certain way in order to, I'm not gonna call her for 3 days after I meet her. Like, what the fuck is that? Just examining that.
Passive aggressive.
So we had a lot of like fun doing that. And then for me, you know, again, things started like slowing down. And in my brain, I'm just thinking, I want to do scripted TV. I want to write.
Wow.
You know, Sopranos is over, but I'm like, oh, I would have loved to write on Sopranos.
Yeah.
Sons of Anarchy had just come out. Oh, I could do that. Lost. I was a big fan of Lost. I'm a sci-fi geek too.
Wow.
So I'm like thinking of all these shows that I would love to get on Mad Men. I'm like, yo, I would love to be on Mad Men, right?
Yeah.
And in my conceited ass New York brain, I was like, I can do it from New York. I don't got to move to Philly, to LA.
Cali,
I can do it. I love LA. LA's dope, but I don't got to do it. And then I snapped out of that nonsense and decided, okay, I'm gonna move to LA.
Mm.
But my first idea of moving to LA, I came up with this thing of, I need X amount of money. I need X amount of money. I got to have X amount of meetings lined up. I should be signed. Like, I created all these obstacles for myself instead of just like, well, let me just write some hot shit and then go out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, as it happens, one day In 2010, February, March of 2010, weird that I don't remember, I go and hang out with a couple of my dudes in Philly. I used to go to Philly, you know, every now and then on the weekends to go hang out. I go hang out, and we hit this club. And at this club, as we're leaving, we get into some words with some dudes. Really stupid, dumbass shit. Ain't got nothing to do with nothing. And it was really stupid.
He be keeping it real. It was just dumb shit.
And so these cats jump out on us 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. And the dude I was squared off with, he was crazy young. Like, young. He probably was a teenager or like 20, 21. Mm-hmm. And my boy to my right starts mixing it up with this dude. Like, they just went in and started mixing it up. Mm-hmm. And, or whatever, barking at each other. And I'm looking at this kid, and I remember thinking, his hand was behind his back. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, okay, so is this little dude holding? Does he got a burner? Like, and I'm like, nah, he doesn't have a gun, because if he did, he'd have pulled it. It's probably a knife. And then as I'm thinking all this, I'm like, I'm close enough to just duff him. I could just, you know, knock him out. Mm-hmm. But wait, I'm a little tipsy. I'm going to have to two-piece him. Mm-hmm. I'm like processing all this.
All this is going through his head.
Wow.
And that's when it hit me. Okay, I'm drunk. I'm doing way too much thinking. And I lost it. So I got to pause. And my boy starts mixing it up to my right. And when I look to my right for like a half a second, I took my eyes off this kid. And he got me.
Really?
He stabbed me. Yeah, he stabbed me. He stabbed me in the ribs. And he hits me, you know, he pops me, and the look on his face was like terror, like, oh, and he just takes off, tells, yo, get in the car. The dudes jump in the car, and I'm holding my side, and my boys don't know what happened to me. I'm just holding my side. Hmm. Remember, I was wearing a white shirt, man, fucking Kenneth Cole. Bought that shit that day. Bought it that day, took a selfie, like, yeah, let's go get that
And
the weird shit is, when we was in the crib before we went out, and I'm like, you know, stunting with the shirt, my boy goes, yo, whatever you do, man, don't drink nothing with cranberry in it today.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying, you don't want no cranberry juice on that. And for whatever weirdo fucking reason, my brain said, or blood. So when that happens, I'm holding my side, and we walk into the car, and I'm like, yo, this fucking dude just stabbed me. I don't say nothing to my boys. We're in the car, and they're like, yo, let's get these motherfuckers. They had things in the car, and they want to drive around and chase them. And I went, yo, fellas, they got me. What are you talking about? And I was like, I was pissed off. I was really angry, like, yo. And I look at my hand, and it's just drenched. I look at my shirt, and I'm leaking like fucking crazy.
Wow.
And my boys are flipping out. Yo, what the fuck? So they rush me to the hospital. And I'm fading. You know, they're asking me my name. What's your name? How old are you? And when I said my age, I felt like really fucking stupid and embarrassed. And I'm fading. And I just kept thinking about my little ones, man. I kept thinking about them. And I kept saying, yo, let me get my phone. I want to call my kids just in case, you know?
Mm.
And then they put the fucking thing on me, the anesthesia, and I don't remember nothing, but I woke up some hours later, fucking stitched up, crazy. And then I found out, and again, I'm not embellishing, not to make this shit a story, because I haven't told the story to too many people, but here I am running my mouth.
There's only 50,000 people out there.
And the doctors were basically like on some, yo, dude, like here's the deal. A centimeter up, and it would have punctured your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Centimeter down, it would have got a liver, because it's on
kidney.
The side. It would have got a kidney. Forward would have hit your lung,
right. Mm-hmm.
Backwards, and they were like, we don't know how the hell, but that shit went straight through and didn't hit nothing but tissue.
Wow.
And rib muscle.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a lot of blood, I lost a lot of weight, I was out for a little bit, you mm-hmm. know. Then I went and recuperated at my boy's house for like a week, couldn't really walk. And then I, you know, they drove me to New York. I still was walking around like super weak, hobbling.
Wow.
I probably could stand for like, it's not like I lost my ability to walk. I don't mean it like that. I just mean I was just super weak.
Right.
Anyway, so as I was recuperating, feeling better, I went out with my nephew, Rod Perez. Love him to death. He's my nephew, but we're really close in age. So I consider him like one of my best friends. I'm going to take you out to dinner, Unc. And we go out to dinner somewhere like First Ave and First Street down in the Lower East Side. And he says to me, when are you moving to L.A., man? And I was like, I don't know, man. I need this. I need that. I need this. I need that. And he was like, are you sure you're not scared to move? And of course, you know, tough guys, you're scared. He's almost scared. And he was like, I don't mean consciously. I just mean, you know, what do you think about when you think about moving to L.A.? And I said, oh, I think about the mountains, man, because even if the industry wasn't there, it's just California's just dope, man. The air, the mountains, the ocean. I just feel it over there, man. I just like it. What else? Do you think of anything bad? And I said, I think about missing my babies, man. I think about them a lot. And he says, well, maybe, you know, what you're doing is going to be better for them. And you just need to stop thinking short term and it'll just be better for them.
Wow.
Like, this is what you've always wanted, man. And then his eyes got fucking watery and he was like, yo, Unc, man, I thought you were finished. I thought you was not going to come back from this. Like, I thought you were going to just be super depressed and just be like, oh, fuck it, man. I give up. And he said, yo, dude, I used to talk to you when you would call from prison back in the day because he was still a kid. You know, I was in my early 20s. He was a teenager. And he was like, and I honestly just thought you were going to wind up a fucking stereotype, like full of shit. Because you would talk to me from the phone from prison talking about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And you did it.
Wow.
Yo, dude, you did it. So the fact that this just happens to you, and he was like, yo, man, I thought you were fucking gone, man. I thought I lost you, man. Like you almost died. So I went home that day on the subway, and I was like, oh, shit, I almost fucking died. Like, I stopped to think about that.
All right.
And I'm, you know, not embarrassed to say this, but I had $40. That's all I had, $40. I never say to my name. I learned better years ago. Fuck that. As far as I'm concerned, and you, brother Hilliard, and you, sis, you should say, no matter how much you got, you got fucking millions and billions to your name because your name is your all. So I was like, I got $40 on me. I'm going to L.A. I have no fucking idea how I'm going to do it, but I am going to L.A. I'm out of here. Hobbled up to my little apartment that my girl Rosie was letting me stay at. And as I sit here before you, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to go to L.A. The next day, I'm on the bus to catch the subway to go to my favorite Starbucks, 67th and Columbus. Shout out. Across the street
from
ABC. Right?
This motherfucker loves Starbucks.
Right? Y'all need to fucking give me free gold forever, yo. And I'm on the bus, and I happen to check Facebook. Right? I happened to check Facebook and this brother Jordan Summers hit me. I had never met him. Yo, Carlito, my name is Jordan Summers. My father and I are putting together a commemorative book on the history of hip hop. It's going to be monumental. It's going to be like 17 by 20. It's going to weigh like 20 pounds or whatever the fuck size. It's going to weigh 20 pounds, 400 pages, blah, 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 blah. We're looking for writers, whatever, and your name keeps coming up. And when I looked up your writing, dude, I got to have you in this book. I'll tell y'all right now how much he paid me. I need you to write a 3,000 word essay on the history of MCing, the history of rapping. I can pay you $2,500.
Wow.
And I know that's below your rate. And here's real talk. Had that been 5 years earlier, my cocky ass, conceited ass, having just left the source, would have been like $2,500 for 3,000 words. That's less than a dollar a word. Don't you know they pay me like $3 a word now? You bugging kid. I ain't doing that. I'd have been that guy.
Yeah.
But having almost lost my life and having said to the universe the day before, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to go to L.A. And then lo and behold, and when I was reading that message, I was on the bus like, yo, looking around me like, that's fucking weird. long story short, I wrote the essay. A week later, he hits me back. I need you to do another one. So in 2 weeks, like, I doubled my money.
Wow.
And then he was like, we're based in L.A. We're going to mail you the check. And I was like, you based in L.A.? Do me a favor. Hold on to
my check.
Oh, yes. I'm flying out there.
Hold my check.
And I hit up my pops. Pops, spot me $300, trying to buy this plane ticket. Got you, son. And I came to L.A. Remember my original, I'm going to move to L.A. I need this. I need that.
Right.
The amount, the early amount was like, I need $18,000. I got to get an apartment. I need a car. I need meetings. Da, da, da. And I went to L.A. I got to L.A. I think I probably had like $80 on me. My backpack. My boy Andre Ware, great actor. He had spent mad time in L.A. and he was moving back to New York. So I crashed with him for like a week.
Wow.
Met up with Jordan and his father, Jeff, where we had traded all these talks about the Bronx. And they gave me my little couple stacks and got an apartment. And I've been here since, man. And Jeff took a liking to my writing and he knows every fucking body. So he sent my stuff out to like, no lie, y'all. Like he was sending my stuff out to like Richard Pepler and Kevin Riley, like the like
the top CEOs cats. Of these
dudes. And I'm laughing because I'm like, them dudes don't day to day, right? It's like they have no idea. But it didn't matter because they responded well, knock on wood, and they would refer him, hey, go holler at my so-and-so VP of drama, EVP of development, blah, 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 blah. So I started connecting all these dots. And in so doing, I said to you guys earlier, I took a general at HBO, connected some dots there. Time passes. My friend at CBS, head of corporate diversity, Barbara Matos, she introduces me to Carol Kirshner, who's dope.
Right.
I love Carol. Diversity Carol program. Told me you need to have somebody submit you for Humanitas.
Right.
So I'm submitting to Humanitas. I'm going through their thing because they, you know, you go through phases. They kept approving. And then one day I'm at the Starbucks over here in Toluca Lake.
There's a Starbucks again.
The magical Starbucks.
Bob's big boy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They need to pay you, dude.
You just want that platinum card.
I don't even need it. I don't even want a lot. Like, just one venti a day for the rest of my life.
That's all it takes.
We'll make that happen on here.
That's peanuts for them. And that's where I met Lindelof. And Lindelof, we traded emails over the summer of 2013. You know, I never asked him to read my writing. I felt like that's thirsty. Like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, right.
Just, you know, and again, listen, y'all, like, I'm a cocky-ass dude, man. I just try to keep it in check. I try to live my life with confidence because otherwise, like, all of this, can you believe this happened to me? Like, I've been working towards this.
Right.
So I try to find a balance between accepting that I'm exactly where I belong while being extremely grateful.
And let me just say this. Let me just say this before you go on. People, he's talking about Damon Lindelof. He just said Lindelof. Damon Lindelof, who did Prometheus and Lost and all that kind of stuff. So that's who he's talking about. But you met him at a coffee shop, right?
Met him in a coffee shop, went up, introduced myself. And again, wasn't thirsty. You know, maybe it's because I was an exec before. You know what it is, too? It's hip-hop. I was talking to my girl, Mimi Valdez. She is chief creative officer. You know Mimi? Oh, that is my girl. I know Mimi a minute. So I met Mimi when I first came out of prison when we were 8 years old. Both. So Mimi is chief creative for Pharrell's company, I Am Other, right? And we were talking yesterday, and I was explaining to her how there are a few of us out here that come from hip hop. So me, Chael, my boy Selwyn, who's doing features and he's rocking with Lionsgate now. He's doing Age of Miracles, which is going to be bonkers, by the way. And so we have a different attitude. Exactly. Like because we all come from journalism and then it's hip hop journalism. We kind of got a little bit more of the in your face kind of attitude. Like, yeah, I was a Starbucks writer, but I'm not a shy dude.
I'm
not going to be the guy who's going to be in there and then try to be, you know, or rather be all socially awkward in the room. I'm not trying to dominate the conversation, despite what you may think from this. But I'm not gonna be a shy guy. Right. So when I introduced myself to him, it wasn't all hat in hand, hey man, oh my God.
Right.
It was like, yo, dude, popped him on the shoulder. Yo, man, I'm a big fan of your shit, man. Good luck on the leftovers. Peace. And, you know, we just, oh, wait a minute, dude. And we just started talking, traded emails over the summer. And then when I told him that I got the Humanitas New Voices grant, you know, he offered me the job on Leftovers. And that was life-changing. Like, that dude gave me a shot, man, you know, not having read me. And, you know, knock on wood, it, you know, he didn't fuck himself up in the process. Of course, you know, he had to get approval from HBO.
He had to go vet, like, let me go back behind the scenes and find out.
Yeah. But because I had the relationship at HBO, then Francesca vouching me, yo, Carlito's good people. Like, yeah, we want to work with him. So it all worked out. Mm-hmm. It all worked out. And then, you know.
And you were on there for the season.
I was on it for season one. Mm-hmm. You know, he every episode was co-written. You know, so he blessed me with a quote unquote half an episode. But yeah,
can you tell the audience a brief synopsis of what The Leftovers, what the show is?
Oh, so The Leftovers is based on a novel by Tom Parada of the same name. And it's about a man and his family, Kevin Garvey, a man and his family coming to terms simultaneously as the world comes to terms with this crazy, like, global tragedy where 2% of the world's population just ups and disappears one day. Mm. October 14th.
Nobody tells you why.
We were never going to put the year on it, but whatever. October 14th on a given day, like, 2% of the world's population disappears. So, like, we were all here talking, and I'm running my mouth, and all of a sudden, in the middle of a...
Gone, right.
Right.
That kind of, right? No cloud of smoke, nothing. It's just like, whoa. Mm. Of course, my man Neil deGrasse Tyson, shouts to the Bronx.
Yeah.
He did a little thing on it like, well, if that were really to happen, you would have little mini atom bombs.
He was always coming in saying something.
That brother is strong,
like,
man.
Well, actually.
So it was really challenging for Damon, having come from Lost, where it was like question. Here's some answers. Mm-hmm. And Tom Parada's book, it wasn't about finding the answer.
Right.
So in a weird way, it's not sci-fi or fantasy or supernatural. It happens before the book even starts. Like, it happened, and it's people dealing with that. So when I read about it before I met Damon, and he was talking about, I have no intention of finding the answer. That's not what the series is about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I went into the writer's room that first week like, all right, so we're going to have dudes in the lab trying to figure out. And he was like, nope, we're not doing that. So all the writers are like, oh, shit. All right, well, let's lean right into that. Let's let's be bold, and let's that's not what the show is about. It's really about
relationships and
real talk. I've read the book, the source material, prepping for the room, and I read the pilot, and I had to put that book down four times because it's about it's about loss and how we process loss, and it triggered a bunch of memories for me. You know, it triggered a lot of that for me. How do you process somebody? Like, what significance does a little moment have? There's a story that he tells about how he was driving one day, got a little distracted, and waited half a second before the light turned green. Before he was at a light, he waited a half a second before he hit the gas, and that half a second, this car runs the red. And he tells that story because he was like, now what if I would have been on point with that light and I would hit gas?
Right.
What would my life have been? I think about that with my mom a lot. You know, when my mom's died, I was hanging out with my boy Louie across the street, and she had asked me, do you want to stay there overnight? Do you want to come home? And I used to wonder, what if I would have said I want to spend the night? She probably would not have gone out. My sister, who invited her out that night, for years was in therapy because all she kept thinking was, I invited her out. She was home chilling, and I'm the one that was like, come out. Come on, Ma. You never had fun. So that's why The Leftovers really, 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 really spoke to me. And then I really connected with the character, Kevin Garvey, because he's Generation X. This guy in his like early 40s who we did the math one day. Was like, yo, this dude had kids young. He had a kid at 20. Or got with a woman who had a kid who he adopted. They had a kid at 25 or whatever, 24. So I really related to the characters that way. So it was a lot of fun for me, man.
It was interesting how you got that particular TV show, you know, in terms of dealing with loss and coming through there.
I've heard you say that show is like the type of writing you really like to do, like that type of show.
Absolutely.
You know, as much as people, it has that emotional...
Oh, yeah, no doubt. As much as people say to me, oh, Empire's perfect for you, and I love it, and I appreciate it. They, you know, it's easy to think that. Yeah. Oh, hip hop.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right? Oh, Lucius Lyon, you know, street dude. Oh, Cookie, prison. And that's all well and good. But I don't write soap. That's not my thing. So it's been a learning curve for me. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I'm in the Empire room, and I'm like, so on The Wire, they did this thing once, and Wendy Calhoun, who's a co-EP on the show, Wendy. I love her to death. She was like, I love that. It's awesome. But if we twist it this way to make it more soapy, and I'm like, okay, that works. And then after three or four times of that, she's like, I love it, but we're not The Wire. And I'm like, you're right.
Yeah, no, you're Dallas and Dynasty. That's exactly what you are.
Dynasty.
So I've been embracing that, man. It's as a writer, period, as writers, period, you know, we want to let's challenge ourselves. Like, I'm not going to write the easy stuff. So Leftovers wasn't easy because every episode we had to come up. It was almost like breaking a pilot every episode because we had to come up with new engines. There's no engine.
Right.
He's a cop who's not really doing cop stuff.
Right.
She's a teenager who's, you know, we didn't want to do the tropey teenager stuff.
Right.
What would the teenager do in this world?
Yeah.
This, you know, if you guys saw the series, that's why we had her doing the crazy shit with the little baby Jesus and all of that stuff. And then the mom, this people would say to me, about Amy Brenneman's character. Mm-hmm. I don't get it. And I would tell them, if you watch the series as a whole, just mm-hmm. watch it. And I bet you you'll get it. And
people started to get it. Because
I had to binge it. Because I read the book and I was like, I totally understand why somebody would join a group like that, a mm-hmm. cult like that. Mm-hmm. Like, what the fuck is the point? Right. Like, if we could just go at any minute, it's not a tornado. It's nothing you can explain. Right. It's not a hurricane. It's not a tsunami. It's something you can't explain. I can totally see how you just shut down emotionally, spiritually. And you're just like, okay, we need to be in service of the higher, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And just forego all this other stuff. Yeah, no, we can't forget what happened to us. Right. So that was that character. So yeah, man, it's very much what I'm into.
What's it like working in that? Because you guys have, what is it, 16 of you guys in Empire?
At Empire right now is 14. 14 writers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
14 writers. What's that like being in a room? Because I've been in many rooms. There's just like 8 of us or right. 6 of us.
Because Empire room is like the old school days of TV writing rooms.
Y'all went way back. I mean, what's that like with that many people? How does a room run like that?
It's
How do you get your voice in when there's that many people?
You know, surprisingly enough, I was worried about that when I counted, when we got the email. Welcome to the room, y'all. See you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? First, I can't lie. I was like complaining to my reps, like, see, man, I'm probably not going to get an episode. I'm low level. I'm low on the totem pole. I'm probably not going to get an episode. It's cool. I'm here. I'm in it. I'm going to make it work. It's going to be dope. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. But nah, man, Eileen, you know how it works. You know how it works. Eileen is super generous. Like, she's crazy generous. Like, everybody has a voice, right? Even now, every now and then, well, not even every now and then, we're always looking to Jamie, our writer's assistant. Jamie, what was the thing? And she'll just pop in and be like, what you guys were talking about was whatever. Like, she retains so much stuff that we talk about, and her notes are impeccable. Like, I'm like, damn. Like, that's a skill set in and of itself. Yeah. And people were telling me, you know, you could start out as a writer's assistant.
Shorthand, too. It's gotta be.
Oh, really my God. Like, and then so she, and sometimes I'll glance over and she's not typing, and I'm like, how the fuck is she doing that shit? And then she told me, like, I know what to filter out. Like, I know when you guys are just riffing on stuff that I need to remember.
Right.
And I know when we're just going down a rabbit hole, that ain't going to go nowhere, you know?
So I ain't topping this shit.
So even the two, we have two PAs, Tao, you know, Taufik, and Hannah. Hannah came from Mad Men, you know, so she knows her way around. Mm-hmm. And we, like, they interchange. Like, one day, one of them is doing, like, basically, like, the support staff stuff, clerical, paperwork, food orders. Very important. You have to be writers. We turn into a nasty pack of animals. and then somebody else, right? And then the other one will be in the room putting up cards on the board and that and that sort of thing. So, but even they have a voice, is my point. Mm-hmm. So from staff writer all the way up to co-EP, like, everybody has a voice, and some personalities are just pop out. Malcolm Spellman, my dude, like, his.
Malcolm is a trip. I love him,
man. Like, that dude, he just has that quality of like, clear vision. This is where we at.
Let me ask you a quick question. I don't mean to change the subject. Like, I was just mentioning about, like, the Empire panel we did at the Writers Guild, right?
Yes.
Because I'm on the committee that puts on most of those, right? Now, I noticed that, I mean, you guys had Danny Strong on, you know, one of the creators of the show. And then you had, like, some other writers. Mm-hmm. How did you get on and some of the other producer levels didn't get on, if you're just the staff writer? What happened?
Oh, boy.
What happened?
You start talking about levels. Now you're making me feel like, oh.
I'm not trying to, but I'm just trying to figure out.
Because he was in jail. That's why he got on.
Let me get you on text and be like, ask me about levels and political shit. I'm just curious about how, because I know it can be kind of political when you have other producers in the room and you're a low-level writer, but yet they're not on the panel. So, I mean, what? Is it just like the showrunner said, hey, you're coming? What happened?
No, I think that panel, again, listen, you know, it's Danny, he's an EP. He's not the showrunner, but he's an EP, co-creator. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we gotta defer, right?
Definitely.
He and Eileen have a great relationship working-wise, you know, where they have their own dynamic.
Sure.
Lee as well. Lee will breeze in every week, every couple of weeks, and, guys, this is what I think. And blow our minds and piss us off, but then, or we'll be like, oh shit, wow, okay, we make that work. We can make that work, Lee, hell yeah, right? Mm. So they have their dynamic. In that particular case, honestly, I don't think politics had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. One of the Yvette reached out to me from the Latino Writers Committee. Yvette reached out to me.
She's on our show.
Yeah, Yvette reached out to me.
Yvette Vargas.
Yvette Vargas, yep.
Yeah.
And she's people's, you know, fellow New Yorker. And she reached out to me and was like, Carlito, so we're doing this Empire panel. I would love, as the Latino representative on Empire, like LWC, I would love to have you on that. And so I was like, to the people that were going to be on it, yo, guys, come on, it's cool. Of course, hell yeah, get down. So that's how it, that's how that happened.
I was just curious. I mean, you're great. I'm
thank
just
you, I appreciate it.
Because I saw Malcolm happened. And then I saw you and I was like,
yeah, and then some of these panels, honestly, some of them just happened because, like, I know that they did one in New York.
Availability probably, too.
That was Fox. Like, Fox set that one up.
Yeah, I saw that.
So they had Jashika and Janika, the twins. Yeah, right. They had Eric. They had Josh. And I believe Attica, I believe. But then we did one at the Leimert Park Book Fair that was through Attica. So, you know, Attica's an author. So Attica's got the three books. And so she was promoting Pleasantville. And then they asked, hey, can you do an Empire panel, like diversity? She's like, yeah. So she asked me to be on that one.
Sure. Nice.
So some of the panels are, like, quote unquote official through Fox, and then I don't know if they would ask me or not. And then some of them would be
understood.
You know, the whole thing about titles could get a little bit. I'm being real with y'all.
Squirrely.
Yeah. Well, it could get a little. Again, you know, my ego is the size of Alaska. I have a big ego, y'all. I'm a Scorpio. It's just how we do. But I really try to balance that shit out. I've been a professional writer for a long time. Right, a long time. I've ran a staff. I've run shows. News and docs, but I've run shows. Believe me when I tell you that, you know, as crazy, ecstatic, and jumping up and down when Lindelof offered me Leftovers, you better believe that I went right to my reps and was like, so can we ask for something above staff writer? And they were like, are you crazy? And I was like, why the fuck I gotta be crazy? Like, like, I've been in a professional environment as a writer, getting paid to spit out words along, well, you know, your level, blah, blah, blah. And then I had a conversation with Charles Murray, who was like, boy, you need to shut the fuck up and sit down.
DJ, the story about how when he first came out, the guy was like, he said, nobody told me that I was supposed to
get paid.
I was supposed to compliment him and talk about him. He's like, well, I like your stuff. And Charles is like, okay.
Yo, when you get him on here, please have him tell you the story of how he worked. I don't want to exaggerate, but fuck it, a season and didn't get paid for it.
What?
It was like a bunch of time, and he was like, "I was supposed to get a word." Yeah, he got to tell you that story. It was either with Bochco or with David Milch.
Okay.
Please have him tell you that story, because he told me that and I fell out of my chair at the Magical Star laughing.
Oh my God.
So he put me in check. And I was like, look, Charles, man, I know I'm going to take the job. I'm just venting to my brother, like, damn, yo. And he was like, dude, you are not coming into this game on some CBS cop drama. No knock to CBS, because they're still number one. Or TNT, TV. Like, you're not coming on some drama that's going to be ranked 50th.
Yeah.
Like, you're coming in the game
the top
on HBO with Damon Lindelof. Shut the fuck up and sit down.
Right.
And I was like, absolutely.
Because just from being on that show, you can ride.
Right.
That's like, oh, you was hanging out with Lindelof.
That's what I found interesting. You know? Oh, HBO. Yeah. And, you know, so it's been that. So even on Empire, I'm low on the totem pole, but whatever. I don't plan on staying there.
Well, can I ask you this?
Low on the totem pole, y'all. Not that I plan on being on Empire for as long as I'm
telling you. Well, and since Empire is following this family and it's doing hip hop and this black family, when are they going to bring some Latino folk in there? Because you know Latino folk are part of hip hop. And I'm watching Empire because, you know, I did my binge watch to catch up for the new season started. And I was like,
you don't like Jamal's boyfriend?
But I'm talking about in terms of the power artists, the artists.
Well, isn't Pitbull gonna do something?
Well, he can't say anything.
You can't ask him a direct question.
I'm not talking about just in terms of like special guest artists that come. I'm talking about like characters.
No, a character. No.
Yeah, like characters or anything like that.
I recently did an interview with Latina Magazine, Latina.com, LatinaMag.com, right? With my man Jesus Trevino, right? Jesus and another colleague of ours, a friend of mine, Celia San Miguel, they wrote two pieces last year, or last when Empire was season one, early in the year. And one of the pieces was on 10 things Empire got wrong, blah, 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 or whatever it was, right? Don't have me talk. Oh. And one of them was, I read a lot. One of them was Where are the Latinos?
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then Jesus did one that was basically like just the whole piece was why Empire needs Latinos, right? Mm-hmm. I used to be an editor. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the sentiment of that piece, mm-hmm. but that piece to me was ill-advised. Mm-hmm. Mind you, ill-advised because when I was an editor, like, it was all print. Mm-hmm. Probably wasn't ill-advised because it worked. It got a lot of traction. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the traction that it got, the bulk of it, or from where I sat, half of it, it just kind of reignited this very, very disturbing and fucked up Latino versus African American
divisive, like, yeah,
like, right. Mm-hmm. And I emailed him separately or Facebook messaged him separately and was like, "Yo, bro, I understand your sentiment.
Right?
You can find 1,000 other things to complain about on Empire." Mm-hmm. That shouldn't have been one of them. I thought mm-hmm. that was ill-advised. I don't think that strategy works mm-hmm. because now you got a bunch of black folk mm-hmm. and that otherwise would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But now because you did that, and I told them, I said, I equate that kind of stuff with there being a shootout outside mm-hmm. and you want to be the dumb motherfucker who's going to stick your head out the window and see who's shooting. Right? And get popped in your head.
Somebody's
like,
shooting.
Like from the Latino point of view, that wasn't a fight we needed to get into. That has mm-hmm. nothing... Be easy. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of Latino friends and peers and colleagues that mm-hmm. still say that. Mm-hmm. I get messaged all the time. Mm-hmm. Same question you just asked, mm-hmm. right? This may frustrate people to hear. I don't pitch agendas. Mm-hmm. That's just, mm-hmm. I'm a storyteller, period. Mm-hmm. This goes back to when I was at The Source. Mm-hmm. When I was at The Source, my first year there, Selwyn, at the time, he had become editor-in-chief at the point, at the time, and he goes, yo, Lito, I want to do a story on Latinos and hip-hop. I hadn't been pitching that, right? It's not that I approach my life with this weird-ass lens of, like, self-hate or not identifying. I identify like a motherfucker. Carlito. And believe it or not. And, yo, let me take it a step further. Right. I used to correct people when they'd be like, Carlito. I'd be like, Carlito. I used to try to emphasize the pronunciation right. until I'm right. like, let me stop being a dick about yeah. it, right? Mm-hmm. So I represent to the fullest. I'm Cuban, I'm Dominican, I'm from the Bronx. I spent a lot of time in Miami and Philly around Puerto Ricans, black folk, Colombians, mm-hmm. Ecuadorians, like you name it,
right?
I'm of that melting pot. I'm a hip-hop dude. I grew up around black folks, so I identify hardcore with African-Americanism, mm-hmm. right? But my thing is, and you know, was back then at The Source, what I told Sel was, I don't think... If we do that, we do it once and we get the fuck out the way mm-hmm. because it's never been done. Mm-hmm. Because what I don't want to do is, I don't want to stand, I don't know why I always think of like city metaphors. I was like, I don't want to be the dude standing on the roof of the car in the middle of the block mm-hmm. yelling, yo, fuck that. Latino's been here since day one. Oh, nigga, you got to pay attention. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
Because when you do that, here it is, y'all. When you have an other mm-hmm. who's marginalized, mm-hmm. right? You have a marginalized other and you want to like establish a presence for that other mm-hmm. and like declare, hey, we're here. We've been here for that other. Mm-hmm. You have to be very, very careful, right? Mm-hmm. We all in this shit together. Right. You got to be careful that you don't step on
right.
any others mm-hmm. who've been kind of having their own little victories, mm-hmm. right? Empire is a hell of a victory for black people in the U.S.
Right. Yeah, no
like,
right.
redonkulous right. how big that show is, right. right?
Yeah.
So for all of a sudden, for somebody with a name who ends in Z to be talking that, yo, y'all got to have me. I 100% understood why black people were like, God damn, we can't have
Can
shit.
Can we just have a little bit of something? Can
we have something?
No, we just started. So we on season one.
So now listen. Here's the thing, though. Uh-huh. A bunch of my hip-hop journalist friends, when we were sitting around season one, and this is, I said this to Eileen when I met her, Danny Lee, the 20th Century studio people, mm-hmm. 20th TV and Fox people. What did you think of season one? Be honest. Did we get it right? Did we get the music shit right? And what I said to them was, yo, listen, man, if me and my music industry hip-hop snobby friends, if all we did was sat around and trying to pick that show apart, then fuck watching it. Like, it's not fun to watch.
Right.
I got better shit to do.
Right.
I got to write. I got
right.
things to do.
Right.
So to me, once I realized from the pilot, mm-hmm. oh, I get it. This show is a soap. Mm-hmm. It's not for me.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I only have something to do with it because it's hip hop.
Right.
Cool. I just let a lot of stuff slide.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I got way more as a writer, as a creator, as a mm-hmm. as a an aspiring showrunner.
Right.
I have a lot more things to, a lot more cards to play
mm-hmm.
than to all of a sudden be like, yo, I got to have Latino. Y'all want to hire me on Empire? I need to have some Latinos on here.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not how I get down.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My thing is weave it into the tapestry.
Yes.
I did the story in the source million years ago. I bring it up because I, you know, I at the time nobody had done it.
Right.
Did the story in the source. I did like a little correlation between the history of Latinos and hip hop,
mm-hmm.
juxtaposed against the history of Latinos, period.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Before 1492, there was no such thing as a Latino.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right? It was Spaniards.
Right.
Boom.
Mm-hmm.
And Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Boom. Mm-hmm. Keep it moving. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I juxtaposed those two. And then after that, just weave it into the tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't doing stories on Big Pun talking about, yo, he's dope for a Puerto Rican. Yo, he's dope for a Latino.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, Big Pun is dope.
Period.
I'll put him up
yep.
against anybody. Mm-hmm. Anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Kid Frost, Mellow Man Ace, Cypress Hill. Mm-hmm. Like, we just thought it just became
Kid Capri.
Fact.
Right.
So much so right. that all of a sudden, you know, and I don't mean this in a negative way at all. Like, Other MCs started feeling a lot more comfortable with, like, yo, Nori, right?
Yeah.
When Nori first came
yeah.
out,
mm. you
kind of had to dig to hear him say half Puerto Rican,
right? Mm-hmm.
And then, yo, he just went in fully where he started doing songs like with the reggaeton cats,
yeah.
N.O.R.E., Porter Rock from Queens,
right.
Iraq, you know, they, you know, sure. and that sort of thing. Tragedy Gaddafi. Well, I don't know if Traj is half Puerto Rican, but I know AZ is half
INC.
Dominican.
Yeah.
Yep. Fabulous. Mm-hmm. Dominican. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Right.
And these cats, like, started talking about that. And of course, you know, you got Fat Joe waving a flag to the
yeah.
Puerto Rican dude. Mm-hmm. You got Big Pun, Cuba Link, Triple Sage, Dominican. So, like, all these cats, like, you know, and
Don't forget Cypress Hill.
To me, it became woven into the tapestry.
Yeah.
Right? Be Real wasn't, like, super running his mouth, waving a Mexican flag or a Cuban flag, talking mm-hmm. about
he was just spitting. That's
he was just spitting.
That's right.
With a white DJ
mm-hmm.
who's a beast too.
Yes.
You know, Muggs is still my man mm-hmm. too. He's still a monster.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so case in point, I get to Empire and we're breaking a story or something like that in the room one day and a character comes up. And I don't want to spoil anything, but I don't remember if it was the female character, if it was the male character.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it was Malcolm who said, yo, man, we should make him Latino.
Mm-hmm.
And as a joke, I threw my fist up like the power joke, the protest.
Uh-huh.
And everybody laughs. And I give him a little wink like, good looking out, brother. And he was like, nah, I'm serious, Lito, I'm serious.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, I mean, whatever. Because I didn't go into that room like, mm-hmm. yo, I'm saying.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he says, no, man, I feel like we owe y'all. I feel like we owe y'all, man. Come on, y'all. We owe the Latinos, y'all. Empire wouldn't be a hit if Latinos wasn't watching it, too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, damn. Okay.
Malcolm's real people.
But I can attest to that because my sister, Cuban Dominican chick from the Bronx, lives in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. Have you seen Empire? I can't get enough of this. All my Puerto Rican friends, black friends. I got a Mexican friend who was telling me, I said this in the same Latino article, who was telling me that his grandparents hardly speak English. They are hooked on Empire because it's a telenovela today.
Right.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, my God, I love this show.
With
music.
Right.
So Malcolm says that. Malcolm says that. And I'm like, oh, snap. All right. I mean, hey, and I looked at the showrunner. She was like, yeah, sure, of course, whatever. Like, mm-hmm. like, let's rock. Like, it wasn't like a deliberate thing.
Right.
And then it made sense for the story,
mm-hmm.
right? And then other characters, and let's just say that, you know, knock on wood, you just weave it into the tapestry.
Okay. I'm hoping that happens because it's like one of the things that I enjoy about the show, the soap opera act, it's just every time something happens, just like, oh, my God, this wouldn't happen in real life. But I'm like, I'm still watching it anyway. Like,
right.
what?
It's
like,
smart. It
but
knows
it's like,
how to do
I just
it.
Almost feel like I want to see that. Like, I want to see more of the Caribbean. I want to see a lot of the roots because a lot of our, even our quote-unquote African-American mm-hmm. characters, a lot of them do have those Latin or Caribbean roots,
oh, Caribbean.
You know, and bring that into.
Did y'all watch the premiere? Season
yes.
one premiere? I mean, season two premiere?
Yes.
So did you see Anika?
Yes.
Did you see Grace Gilley? Did you see
God.
Her do her thing with Mimi Whiteman with the? She's an island girl,
mm-hmm.
so but she's like, all right.
Yeah, she's from Cayman Islands. Yeah.
We didn't. That wasn't written into the script like
right.
that. She's gonna pop it.
Right.
We just said Anika begrudgingly dances with Mimi
right.
Whiteman.
Right.
So when Grace, you know, she's a dope actress. Mm-hmm. When she was in the moment, and there's Lee. She's took a little sweater off and pop, 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 and we saw the dailies and right. fell out. Like,
Yeah, she popped it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, just to me, it's just organic. It's just part of it anyway. It's just exciting to be able to see that in there.
Yeah, add your flavor. And I will say this. I will say this. Just because I don't want – I will say this. In terms of specifically Latinos on the show, yes. Yes, you will see Latinos on the show. Some of it is very specific. Some of it, the fact that they're Latino, we leaned into it and made it a part of the story. And other aspects of it, nah, it's just the world. And it works fine.
I love that.
Like, it's not a big thing. Wait, what? Like, it just is what it is.
It is, yeah.
Which is, yeah, you know. And next up, you know, fucking leave it up to me. We'll have a dude like, it's my man's name that was spitting fire back in the day, Jen. This Asian cat that was a monster.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'll have some... Have some Asians on there kind of like doing their thing. Because to me, that's what I remember for being in the hip-hop industry. You know what I mean? A lot. It's just very multicultural, which is hip-hop to me.
Yeah, when I would go to hip-hop, you know, rap concerts, and you go in there, and it's like, oh my God, it's the UN, also.
Benetton ad.
Yeah,
it's a big, giant Benetton
ad. You know, and everybody doing their thing. But yeah, I was wondering, it's like, are they going to have some more? And like you said, the thing is to have it organically weaved into the story, not just, let's just throw them in like most TV shows do. Just throw them in the background or something. Like, no.
Nah, it's a really dope environment in there. Like I said, Eileen is very, she's very generous, you know, so we all get to weigh in. And, you know, we're all pitching stuff from real life, you know. I'm not necessarily in there just like, hey, I remember when this thing happened when I was at the source. But every now and then a story will come up organically. Somebody else will pitch it. And then, you know, you figure out a way from your life or your life to kind of like shade the character a certain way emotionally. And it's a lot of fun, man. The show is is a lot harder to write than I thought. Sitting in my armchair. I was an armchair showrunner. Like, oh, my God. They did that? Ah, come on. Oh, okay. We want to hire you on Empire.
And then you got in the room. You're like.
And I'm over there coming in there like, all right. I got this. And when I, you know, knock on wood, I wrote episode two. So when I got the shot to write that episode, man, I turned it in and told Eileen, like, yo, first of all, thank you for the shot. But golly, she was like, no, listen, people think it's an easy show to write. You know, don't worry. You know, you're getting it.
So the next episode's coming up is yours.
Episode two.
Are you going to live tweet? Because, you know, we'd be live tweeting.
Because this will be dropping tomorrow anyway. So.
Oh, a word?
Yeah.
Wow, you guys don't play. Yeah. I strongly suggest you divvy this up in like 10 parts.
Three hours. Because we do about an hour and a half sometimes.
My episode is called Without a Country. And I'm going to be live tweeting. You know, it's a thing. Fox asked us, come on down, live tweet with us. So I went down for the premiere, and it was a lot of fun. Oh, I got to say this because I feel like it's straight clown. But so the whole time I'm live tweeting, I'm like, my numbers are going to go up after this. They got to go up. An hour in, all right, I got like 10, 15 followers. That's cool. Out of 1.3 million tweets on Empire.
But you're a writer, though.
No. Listen, it goes up. Trust me. I live tweeted Leftovers last summer, and... Like within a day, 80 followers, 100. And I'm like, damn, right? So I live tweeted. I'm like, okay, 10, 15 followers. And it wasn't until yesterday, day before yesterday, that I realized.
People started hashtagging that motherfucker.
I was using the wrong hashtag.
Are you serious?
I was using hashtag Empire, which is fine. But they were flashing on the screen, hashtag Empire Season 2. The whole time. So I'm like,
I do both.
Had the generic one.
I did both. Like, I do Empire, and then I did Empire Season 2. So because some people still looking at the Empire tag.
Sure.
But if you put both hashtags,
then it'll pop up.
Those people can find that, too. Because if you just put Empire, people are like, oh.
And that's going to challenge. If I do both, it's going to challenge me. I haven't counted the characters in that, but it's going to challenge me to, like, okay, so now I don't have 140.
You got to say what you got to say.
I got, like, 100.
And just add little plus signs. And plus, like, oh, he's got more.
He's got more. Okay.
There we go.
Dot, dot, dot. And then that's how I do it in there. Because it's so much fun.
So y'all live tweeted too?
Yeah.
Do you do the East Coast or the West Coast feed?
Of course I have to do the West Coast. I don't have a feed to watch it right when it comes out. So I got to wait and stay off of Twitter.
Yeah, you got to stay off.
So them heifers on there. I know who you are. My friends on there who be like, tweet. I'm like, no, I got to wait. But the only hard part about that is a lot of times the writers and the producers, they'll do the first one, the East Coast one. And the celebrities may tweet. And it's like, we get the little cold left. It's like, you get to the party. I'm like, oh. And then you get the cold leftovers. And it's like, oh.
Nah. Listen, last week I did the East Coast one at Fox. And then I went to my man Black Spot, the man cave. And I did
on Ventura.
Yeah, Ventura. Yeah, that's, yeah,
my,
yeah. That's
my boy owns that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Frank and You know
man,
Frank.
Yeah, Frank's good dude, man.
Get the so Dave.
My boy
and
Black,
Dave too.
And
yeah.
Dave too. Yeah, right. My boy Black does the weekly Empire Wednesday.
Get the freak out! Are you serious?
Yeah. Wait, I'm about to call Frank. A weekly thing.
I'm about to call Frank when I leave
listen,
here.
Listen to me. Listen. There is a line outside to get in to see free TV.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like it's like that. It's
so they're doing the feed that's playing.
They do the they do the 9 o'clock one. The West Coast.
I'm gonna call Frank's raggedy ass when I leave here.
So I did both. I went did the New York the East Coast one at Vox, and then I was like, okay, let me get to the man cave. And then I tried to do it on my phone. I didn't go as fast because when you're on your laptop, you can. But I gotta follow y'all so we could do it.
Yeah, definitely, because it's fun, and a lot of times is the conversations and how
she goes in with like all the black nerds and all.
Oh, that's dope. Black Twitter,
and then we put our little gifts and our little photos and stuff, our reaction shot. It's fun. Man,
that is the
well. Let me just say this: I did not know you were coming on. I did not know much about or anything like that. But
okay.
I was talking to Renee Rawls, another writing friend. She did this African thing called Sule. She got a Nelson Mandela grant and did a little animated short.
Oh,
you should check it out. And she said, I watched an episode of Empire. Now, you know, people trash it as well. They're like, Empire's that's some ignorant shit, isn't it? And it's some ish. And I was just like, well, I don't know anything about that. But, you know, people, you read the stories about it. Well, Danny Strong was driving down the street and he said, what if P. Diddy? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, whack. But I'm like, okay. So I'm gonna watch the first episode. I stayed up all night watching Empire.
Yeah, this summer I finally sat down because we were
not watching Empire. And I was like,
because
you know what's funny is I had seen bits and pieces. I know, I don't know if you know this, Sean Hayes from Will and Grace.
Uh-huh.
Him and his husband did an Empire Strikes Back.
Oh,
and
he
did all the cookie lines, and the husband did Han Solo. You should check it out. You got something. You got something, boy. You ain't got to make me do when she was in the car talking to the federal agent.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is interesting. But when I watched it, the show is she's way just over the top. She's like, y'all kids can quit playing with my wigs. I'm like, this is some ish right here.
She said
he's some Darth Vader ish. I don't know what he know and how he know it. And he's doing and Sean Hayes is doing it with a drink in his hand. And then the dog comes on, right?
Yeah.
And when she tells her about going to Judd Nelson, I don't know the character's Billy.
Billy
she goes,
Buddy?
But you can't speak English now, huh? But the dog goes, and he does. You can't speak English now, huh?
Right.
And I'm like, wow. So I'm listening to that, and I'm watching. I'm like, I'm just like, wow. This is seriously this soap opera
thing. Once you know that soap opera and the craziness of it,
but now I gotta wait for wait for 10 episodes now. I can't be watching.
I wish they just drop all the episodes now and let me binge watch.
Because
I was like you hear about it, it's like I don't know.
But that's how they make their money on the
show. And then through the summer, I sat there and I binge watched. I went out. I had to stop after 2 episodes, go get some snacks, hold up in the house, and just be like watching.
I watched it. I was up until like 5 o'clock the next morning. I was like, what?
Did you guys go up from season 1? Do you get more? Episodes were the same.
We got 18.
You got 18 now. Yeah.
18.
And you guys came back stronger than ever. And Rosewood.
I was mad. Y'all should have had a 2-hour premiere. I felt like it should have been 2 hours.
Halo.
Yeah.
Rosewood got some love. Shouts to my girl, Jaina Lee Ortiz.
Mm-hmm. She's on Mark that. Chestnut. No.
So, yes, another Bronx native, Puerto Rican sister from New York. She's doing her thing. Introduced me to Morris, who's a cool dude. And I'm like, damn, dogs, I'm still from Boys in the Hood.
It's like I was telling Hillier in the last episode, and I was talking about the top three. TV shows, network TV shows, and we're not counting reality TV shows, just basic like drama shows. Like Empire is like one of the most, in terms of advertising dollars, the most expensive. Yeah. It's like $500,000.
It was a list.
It was 500. Like, yeah, three, it was like
Empire.
Seven,
it was
three, Scandal.
Scandal.
And How to Get Away with Murder.
Right.
But Empire
in
is the
top.
Yeah.
Six.
Like you, if you want to put a commercial on their show, you paying $500,000 for just 30 seconds.
Well, you know what?
30 seconds.
I know you got to wrap up, but I'll give you this one in terms of TV business. One of the things that they're paying a lot of attention to beyond the eyeballs current is the social media activity.
Oh, God,
we just found out that Empire Season 2 premiere I don't want to fuck this up. It's the most tweeted show drama of all time.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
More than Scandal?
So it generated that much activity.
Y'all be going in on
and the other thing that,
and that's just as important as like the
it
ad.
It is.
Well, the other thing that was important, I thought was interesting, like I said, I would read the stories about it, is that it was been since 1993 that no show built on its audience like Empire did.
Like weekly, every week.
Wow. Boom, boom, boom. I think the last show was like Frasier or something like that.
Right. And thank you to whoever casted Tyra Farrell and brought her back on TV, because she
was slaying her,
and she looks gorgeous. And I'm like, please. You know what?
She
I'm
played Roxanne
you.
Ford. She played the prosecutor.
You don't
Roxanne
remember
Ford.
Tyra?
Oh, the black bitch in the shoes.
Cheap shoe.
Yes.
She was like, they're Tom Ford.
They're Tom Ford.
Yes.
They're going to go up your yellow ass.
Yes. When she said that, like, I was going to tweet, I can't say yellow ass on Twitter. I was like,
I'm just like, this is one of those shit to me. This is one of those shows, because, like I said, I was like, yeah, but this is one of those shows where you, like, okay, it's like South Park almost.
Yeah.
I'm going to quote some of these lines, and I can see why he does that. Sean Hayes did that thing, but you got to watch The Empire Strikes Back.
I will do, man. We'll do.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, Khalido, man.
Well,
we appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. I know I went.
Nah, dude, it was worth the wait.
No, it was
dude, we're going to do a two-parter.
Five-part series.
No,
it's going to be a two-parter past this.
Yeah,
two-parter.
Yeah.
I'm going to do you this week and next week. We're going to go in.
Yeah.
So thanks, Khalido. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
Where can people find you at?
I'm on Twitter at Carlito Machete, or for my Espanol speaking folks, Carlito Machete.
It's
C-A-R-L-I-T-O Machete.
Is this a straight Mapes? There's no...
No spaces. Okay. I'm the same way on Facebook, Instagram. I keep the same handle.
Mm-hmm.
Straight through. And then next Wednesday on Fox, Empire Without a Country, my episode. And I'm really proud, you know.
That's good.
Yeah, thank you,
guys. I'm looking forward.
Thank you for having me.
Escribe.
What?
I see Mimo.
Where you at, Lisa Cult Jam?
You can find me on, of course, on Twitter. I'm usually lurking on most of the hashtags, but one of my favorites is also the Saturday Night Sci-Fi hashtag, or the Friday Night Horror. You can also find me with my film reviews on BitchFlix. I'm always on there. You know, if you go to BitchFlix, I'm going to give you the film reviews with the intersectional black feminist point of view. I'm going to bring it to you.
She be going in, Carlito.
I'll bring it to you. Nice. You know, and yeah, but you know, I'm always on Twitter. That's
all right.
You know, watching live tweeting the shows, and if the people, the writers live tweeting, I love that. Can you interact?
You'll see her.
Okay.
She be making a bold statement too. Where you at, Kev?
I'm at killer_brew on Twitter. I can't believe I remembered. Can you believe?
You should, as much as we get on
what?
You.
You're a hot mess up there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get some side effects.
Exactly. I am your host, Hilliard Guest, and you guys can find me on Twitter. I almost said it like you with your Bronx accent. And you guys want to follow the show, Screenwriters RR on Twitter. If you guys want to email us anything, we are talking about doing a kick-ass show for you guys, a question show. Y'all can send us some questions. Screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Special shout out to a couple of the countries out there. Dude, we are all over the world. Almost 90 countries.
That's
all
right. Dope.
For screenwriting.
That is dope, man.
Black folks.
Absolutely. Everybody else
too. Look, we only have a Facebook page and Twitter. That's it. I don't have a website. I don't do nothing. All we do is put it out there.
Tell your story, y'all. Tell your story.
You know what I'm saying?
And the fact that your story is so unique and just showing people just all kinds of paths. Yes.
Thank you. Definitely.
We love that.
So anyway, you guys can hit us up. So please do us a favor. All you guys, you know who you guys are. If you're new, if you're old motherfuckers.
old folks need love too.
Okay.
Go on iTunes. Please give us a 5-star review. Subscribe to the show, because we need that shit for the Matrix and stuff like that. Again, thanks to all the countries, all the states, all the people who are listening. We love y'all. We appreciate it. So look, we always say keep it 2015. Join in with us. You too, honey girl. All right. So on this show, we keep it street. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what?
2015. All
peace,
right.
Y'all.
Ciao.
I can recall when I was small, just this tall, my pops would drop jewels with rules and fist balls, list all the good and bad about being a young dad. Feel glad about the fun his son had, because games were made for the youth. He smiled while his child went wild when his first tooth, frustrated for a quarter. Sometimes he sweat and sort of give some thought about how to support a family of five, stay alive and thrive through all the struggle. He'd always stress not to trouble my life with a wife and child while a child still, because ain't no thrills paying the bills, but I'll fill in the blanks and then give thanks for the lecture. Pops, you my man and you know I respect you, but I chose to start my own clan, a teenage rage and gaze like a grown man. I had a choice, but a voice spoke woke up when I erupted and told me don't interrupt it. The coitus and boy, this push came the shoving. Because of the loving, I put a bun in the oven. My girl was P-R-E-G-N-A-N-T. Her figure was full, but the fridge was empty. I was forced to be a source of currency. Be the boss, pay the cost for her and me. I couldn't pay bills if skills I lacked. You see, slaving a factory, that shit was whacked in me. I did it my way and walked down a white brick highway. And every day was a Friday, a payday, because I stayed paid in my heyday. Packed to the gills with stacks of bills until the hard knocks of life's a hard knock on the front door. To put it blunt, all cops on the hunt for yours truly, because I was truly a mass in a mint. I couldn't take a hint, so I spent all the cheese I seized on not guilty pleas. I used to flip keys. Now all I flip is the calendar.